Hey, welcome back to Good Growing with the Garden Gal. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fetter.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And she's the Garden Gal, and we're talking about tomatoes right here at the moment. And Jelaine, you had a question about what, the freezing?
Well, yeah, a couple of things about, I'd never heard of freezing tomatoes. I don't know how many people out there have. That's a new one on me. But you said you had to put them in a bag.
Right.
And so I just wondered about why you need to put them in a bag.
Basically so you don't get freezer burn. They okay. won't explode in your freezer. I've never seen that. But
I never thought about that. You're right, freezing.
Yeah, it's not going to explode in your freezer. It just keeps them clean, keeps them from getting freezer burn.
Okay, and then you talked about when you set them out, and then just as they start to thaw, then the skins will just peel right off.
Slip right off.
Yep. Okay, now my understanding, when you're doing tomatoes and you want to get rid of the skin, you would blanch the tomato.
You can also dip them in hot or boiling water.
That's what blanching is?
Yeah.
Dipping in hot water.
And often people will cut a small X on the bottom of the tomato or fruit, if you're doing fruit, and that helps the skin to slip off easily.
When you're dipping it in the water.
You make the cut and then you dip it in the water.
Hot boiling or just real, real hot? Or?
Simmering.
Okay.
And going back on when we were talking about how the tomatoes are shipped, especially during the cold weather months up here, so that we can have fresh tomatoes here. Is it true that is it similar to like they do with the oranges and the citrus fruits in Florida, where they load those up green and then they spray a gas of some kind in there and shut
ethylene.
The doors?
Yeah.
Ethylene. Can you explain that a little bit?
Ethylene helps things ripen. And so that is used in tomato transport. If they're picking them green, shipping them across the country, they do oftentimes treat them with ethylene gas. And actually, in your home, you could do something very similar. Apples give off ethylene. So if you want something to ripen faster, and if it's a type of fruit that will respond to that, you can put an apple in a paper bag on your counter with whatever you want to get more ripe, perhaps a peach that was picked immature. And the ethylene from the apple will help ripen the peach in the bag.
So you're going to put a peach and an apple in a bag.
Yeah,
and that like will, a Ziploc bag, and
paper bag,
paper bag, okay.
Paper bag, because you want some air movement, And if conversely, if you want to store your bananas, don't put them by an apple, because they'll just ripen too fast on you. So,
but lots of information today.
I didn't know that one. And then one of the other questions I noticed in the last couple of times that we've met. A lot of plants are male and female. Are tomatoes male?
No.
And they're not. Nope. They're one sex.
One sex, yep. They have both male and female parts on them.
And then what about pollination?
They do need pollination, but they don't need as vigorous of an insect pollination as a lot of our other crops, because they don't need to be cross-pollinated. The pollen from one part of the flower just has to get onto the other part. And wind shaking can do it. A bumblebee landing on it can do it. Just vibration of the vines by people can do it. So they do need pollination, but they don't need cross-pollination. Okay. Does that make sense, George?
Yeah, it does. I was trying to remember some of the things that I had learned before and was just wondering if it was consistent with the tomatoes. Now, heirloom tomatoes, is there a positive or a negative effect of buying those and growing those over just the heirlooms?
Heirloom tomatoes, that term means it's a tomato that we knew commonly accepted time frame is before World War II. And generally, most heirlooms are not hybrids. The vast majority are not hybrids. And a lot of people like to grow heirlooms because they have perhaps a taste that they particularly enjoy. One of the challenges with heirlooms is they're often more prone to our fungal diseases. So what do we do? How do we get this great heirloom taste, but not the fungal diseases? And something that's been developing in just the last few years is grafting those heirloom tomatoes onto a different tomato rootstock that is disease resistant. And some of that, you can get the best of both worlds. You can get the disease resistance from the tomato rootstock, but yet that great heirloom tomato taste from the top of the plant.
Okay, explain grafting.
Yes, I was just gonna say, how do you graft?
How do you graft? The root, you need two plants whose stems are the same diameter. And with tomatoes, we're talking very small yet. They're just a couple weeks old when we're grafting tomatoes. A diagonal cut is made in both stems at the same angle so that they can match up the living tissue. And then there's usually a clamp that's put on tomatoes. And the root, the plant that's going to supply the roots, is one that's perhaps known for its good, vigorous growth, or it's known for its disease resistance, but maybe doesn't have the best flavor in the world, because it's tough to get everything in one plant. The top piece, the one that has the leaves on it, is going to come from a plant who has great fruit for one reason or another. Maybe it's the size, maybe it's the color, maybe it's the taste, but it doesn't have a very good disease resistance. So you put those two plants together, and voila, you have the best of both worlds. Now, we've been doing this with fruit trees for centuries, but this is relatively new for tomatoes.
Can you do that with most any type of a plant?
I haven't heard it tried widely with other types. Really, tomatoes is all I've heard in terms of our annual garden plants. I don't know if anybody's doing it with anything else.
Wow,
but they are doing it with tomatoes.
That's fascinating. And what about growing tomatoes? Should they always have some sort of a support mechanism there to help them, or is that not necessary?
I would recommend it. One year we grew some tomatoes, and for whatever reason, we didn't get around to staking them. And we put a bunch of straw on the ground and just, okay, go for it. And they did grow beautifully, but they were prone to disease. So what staking does, tomato stems are not strong enough to support a plant with fruit on it.
They're
going to fall over.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, your plant will, because
yeah,
those tomatoes
it'll just
are gonna heavy.
Fall over. Yeah. So you can use a lot of different methods to help that plant keep upright, keep it off the soil, keep good airflow, good sunlight penetration to it. The simplest is just a stake, and you tie the plant to the stake with something soft. There's also tomato cages. I do want your listeners to pay attention to how sturdy is that tomato cage, because I've seen a whole lot of tomato cages that just aren't too wimpy. The plant isn't going to be supported with these wimpy cages. Livestock panels make a great option for trellising tomatoes. Woven wire can make that. In a lot of farm fields, they use a technique called Florida weave, where they put stakes in between tomato plants, and then they take twine and weave it in between the stakes back and forth several times, and so that weaving of twine helps support the tomato plant.
Now, when you said tie the tomato
plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, where are you talking about tying the tomato plant?
On the stem. You're making a loop of something. A thick yarn can work. Something soft and thick is ideal, and you are basically making a loop and putting it around both the stake and the plant so the plant doesn't fall over.
Okay, and so how tall will a plant start to grow when you need to do this? Because you don't do it,
you don't do it immediately.
Yeah.
I like to start staking or tying, if I'm doing it on a stake, when the plant's about 18 inches tall.
Okay, and then you're tying it near the top of the plant, right? Or
Tying it isn't a one-time thing, because the plant's going to keep on growing.
Right.
So you might make the first tie about 12 inches off the ground, and then you come back in a few weeks and put another tie 8 inches above that, and you have to keep supporting. If you're using a single stake in a tie system, you need to, as a plant grows taller, you need to support it.
So yeah, you tie it to the stake. The stake is right next to the stem, and you tie it, and then as it grows, then you tie it again, and you tie it again.
And a tie in the shape of a figure eight allows the plant to move a little bit with the wind, and it's not likely to result in the plant being constricted by the tie.
Yeah, if you tie it tight, you might cut it off.
Yeah, you cut off basically the circulation system in the plant.
Never thought of using livestock panels.
They're great. I love them. They're so sturdy, they're going to last you a lifetime.
And you can just connect them one to the next. If you have a 60-foot long garden with all tomatoes there, right down the row, right?
Well, they don't really connect. You put in a fence post and you attach the livestock panel to the fence post, but the panels themselves aren't really connected to each other.
Yeah, but I got to imagine there's a lot of rusty ones that farmers just have laying around that they'd probably give you.
They don't rust much in my experience. No. We've had them for 10 years and they're not rusty.
You can get cows that make them bent up.
Like rubbing against them?
They're not happy about something and they try to ram.
And they can, if you buy them new, they're a little bit of investment, but they'll last you forever.
Now, what about tomatoes in water? We were talking about water a little bit earlier. Are they a very thirsty plant, or is it something that you don't have to water as much?
They're not an extraordinarily thirsty plant, but you do want to make sure that the soil's evenly moist, not only for good growth, but there's an affliction of tomatoes called blossom end rot, and that's where the bottom tip of your tomato starts to rot. That's caused by a phosphorus deficiency, but that phosphorus deficiency might be caused because there's not enough water to the plant so that the plant can move phosphorus to the fruit. So a good steady water is good. Best is to water in such a way that you're not watering the leaves of the plant. Maybe you're using trickle irrigation, maybe you're using a soaker hose, maybe you're just standing out there with a garden hose and a sprayer on it, but you're being careful to spray down at the soil and not spray the leaves of the plant itself.
So why don't you want the leaves to get wet? Because of rain.
Yeah, fungal diseases. And you know, the early blight, late blight, there's all kinds of fungal diseases out there that will get your tomato. And for a fungus to proliferate on the leaf of tomato, it's got to have a certain amount of time where the leaf surface is wet, called a wetting period. Mm. So the more you can keep your leaf dry, the less opportunity that fungus has a chance to take hold in your plant.
So when it rains, okay, but when you're watering, put it down at the ground.
Yes, that's exactly right, Jelaine.
Okay.
Now, when you're preparing the soil to plant the tomatoes, should you put any type of fertilizer or anything like that in the hole that you've made for the tomato before you cover the tomato up?
I like to put compost in the hole, mix it with the soil. And one of the very interesting things about tomatoes is any part of that tomato stem that comes in contact with the soil is going to grow more roots. Not many plants do that, but a tomato will. So what you can do to help your plant get off to the best start is when you put it in the soil, bury a portion of the stem. Take the leaves off a portion of it, bury that portion of the stem. It will grow more roots and be a healthier plant because of it.
Now, I've heard a number of people that actually take those bottom two or three stems right off of the tomato before they plant it. That's what they're doing then.
Yeah, the leaves.
Right.
That's what they're doing.
Huh. I guess I didn't realize that it roots then up that tall.
Yes.
It makes your plant much sturdier than what it would have been otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and when you're looking for tomatoes, like when they're coming in the seedlings, you should pull those out, and what color should the roots be? Should they be nice and brown and yucky looking, or should they be white, or what color are you looking for?
White. If it's brown, there's a good chance that's some kind of rot has taken a hold. But actually, you probably won't know that until you get the plant home and can take it out of its container. I like to start my own tomato seedlings, because then I can get the exact varieties that I want, because I can order from a seed catalog, and get them so that they're at 6 weeks of age when I want to set them out, and not too young, not too old. And I can, you know, anybody who's growing at home can grow them very healthily so that they don't have too much transplant shock when they get moved out to your garden.
We tried that one year, and one of the problems we had was that we ended up with real tall, spindly plants. Why?
Not enough light. You need a lot of light, and you don't need fancy light. For all of our tomato transplants that we raise, and this includes when we were farming, fluorescent shop lights work, and you want to have the actual light bulbs no more than 2 inches above the plant. And that's awfully close. People are surprised when you hear how close, but you want it that close because the tomatoes need a lot of light.
Okay, bird perches. Tell me about this.
There's an insect called a tomato hornworm that can rapidly eat the foliage of your tomato. And they're kind of hard to spot because they're the same color as the tomato plant. And they can go up along the stem and just be a dickens to find. We found, quite by accident, when we started using the cattle panels as a trellis, in other words, something very heavy that a bird could perch on, all of a sudden the birds were eating the tomato hornworms, and we never had a tomato hornworm problem again once we switched to a trellis system that the birds could perch on.
Any of the birds?
Any bird.
So
whatever birds are that eat tomato hornworms. I've never actually seen the bird eat tomato hornworms, but I've seen the bird droppings on the cattle panels, and no more tomato hornworms.
Really? Isn't that mm-hmm. amazing?
Well, those, I know we used to collect those and raise those.
The tomato hornworms.
Yes. And
what do you do with them?
Well, they become pupa. They actually dig into the ground and then they hatch and they come out as moths. They come out as they call them underwings. And so, see, I wanted to be an entomologist when I was a kid. And so I used to have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of moth collections and butterfly collections and things like that. And so we lived to find those things. It was a ball. And Cecropia moth caterpillars and Polyphemus moth caterpillars and other things like that. But all having a garden, you're going to have a wide variety of cabbage butterflies and not monarchs, obviously, because they eat the milkweed. But you end up with trying to think of the swallowtails on the carrots a lot of times. And both the tiger and the blue swallowtails. And there's just a lot of different butterflies, morning cloaks and different things that are... that are out there.
What are morning cloaks?
Oh boy, they're just—they're not a very big butterfly, about the size of a monarch, maybe a little bit smaller, but they have a very mellow purplish blue color.
So morning cloaks are butterflies.
Yeah, and they come out in the springtime. And
interesting.
But we always like, you know, when you water, you want to always make sure you water and leave a puddle someplace because you're going to have all kinds of butterflies and skippers and other things like that that are going to come and drink that along with the birds. And especially if it's been really hot and you get a lot more color, you know, people have those butterfly bushes and different things. And I don't know, I didn't even realize it until I was growing up and we got one of these, but it was a hummingbird moth. And it looks just like a hummingbird. It has a very long proboscis and it actually sticks it into the flowers and eats the nectar and other things like that. It's just unbelievable. And their wing... speed is very similar to that of a hummingbird, and you would actually thought it was a hummingbird until it, you know, it was actually
so
a moth.
Maybe some of those hummingbirds we are seeing are not hummingbirds.
Could be a moth. That's right. As you look through there.
Interesting.
All right, let's talk about pruning. Once the plants start getting mature, how much of that foliage do you start cutting off once the fruits are on there and starting to really get bigger and bigger and bigger?
Well, some tomatoes you might want to prune before then. And when we talk about pruning young tomatoes, what we're talking about is if you look at the main stem of the tomato and where the leaf comes out, in that intersection, sometimes you'll start to see, or often you'll start to see, a new young set of leaves and stems grow right out of that intersection. A lot of people they're called suckers, and a lot of people remove those. And if you do remove those, that helps some of your early fruit get ripened faster because it tells the plant, send your energy to ripening fruit, not to producing more foliage. So that's kind of an early season pruning. Late season pruning, those indeterminate tomatoes that will keep growing and growing and growing, well, we all know it tomatoes are not going to last forever in our climate. So if you top off that plant, it will generally stop growing taller. And another kind of pruning is 6 weeks before your first frost, you might want to consider removing the tomato blossoms because they're not going to mature. That's really about the deadline. So for us here, now is a good time to start thinking about, maybe I need to pinch those blossoms off the top of the new blossoms because they just won't get to ripe fruit.
And all of a sudden you've got these nice fruit on there, and then it rains a lot, and the fruit splits before it becomes mature. Anything you can do about that?
If you keep your soil steadily moist, it can help lessen the split. The reason they split is all of a sudden they've absorbed a lot of moisture, more than they've had, and that it's that difference that makes them split. The other thing you can do is you can actually put a canopy over top of your tomatoes so they don't get quite as much rain, and that can help with preventing the splits. And there's some varieties like the cherry tomatoes, so many of those, they're just gonna split. The smaller ones are more prone to splitting.
Now, you talked about the canopy, it still lets the light in.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, not shade, sorry. Yeah. But like...
you talked about something
greenhouse
like
film, yes. that kind of canopy. Sorry, thanks for clearing that up.
Well, I just want to make sure, people understood what a canopy.
Yeah. Now, unless you were going to put it on just for the rain and then take it off, it would need to be a clear one.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, that's our program for today. And once again, if you've got any questions for the Garden Gal, give us a call here. It's 231-468-2087. And make sure you check our website at strongtowerradio.org. for past programs of Good Gardening with a Garden Gal. And once again, if you have any questions, there should be an email address there that you can leave those questions, or you can give us a call, 231-468-2087. And remember, our question of the month next month is we're going to be talking about, where do all those rocks come from? Mm-hmm. And Teresa's going to check with her son, and he's a geologist. Is that
yes, he
said?
Is.
All right. And you're going to check with your farmer husband and see if he knows some different people that could maybe talk intelligently from that. And if you know any answers to that, we'd be more than willing to listen. 231-468-2087. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fetter.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And make sure you tune in next time with Good Growing with a Garden Gal.